talk some Ducks, and who better than the guy wired in for 24/7 sports? Try DuckTerritory.com online. The Twitter handle is at Eric_Scopel. Does a great job covering the teams, recruiting, and all the happenings with Oregon sports. Eric Scopel joins us. Scopes, how you doing during the madness that is now our lives these days?
You know, I'm just excited to have football back. I'm excited I get to pop on the radio and talk about some stuff that's taking place in real time, and we have actual games on the docket. I mean, life's pretty good compared to where it was before. I mean, I'm not minimizing some of the other things that are going on globally right now, but, like, I'm just happy that we have these few sort of things to distract ourselves with.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually using the word therapeutic.
I'll take it.
In the past couple days, I know you guys have heard from the coordinators, Joe Moorhead, and so in general, when there's an opening like this at a high-profile program like Oregon, you know, there's a lot of names, there's usually a process, but do you get the sense, would I be accurate in saying that Mario Cristobal really wanted Moorhead as his top priority, and Moorhead really wanted to be here, which is not always the case?
I think that's a fair assessment, and you look at Joe Moorhead's resume, and it's about as impressive as you're going to find for an offensive coordinator. You're talking about a guy who was a head coach in an SEC program last year, and not just a head coach, but, I mean, he had a winning record in two seasons and was let go. He went 14-12, won some, you know, decently impressive games in that conference, which, as we all know, is considered the, you know, the watermark for college football right now. So that part's impressive. You look at what he was able to do at Penn State before that. A player like Saquon Barkley, who he helped develop, the success he had, I mean, just with those offenses, and it almost begs the question of, you know, like, how does he end up at a place like Oregon? But I think Mario Cristobal, a lot of credit to him for the talent acquisition we've seen from a, you know, high school recruiting perspective, but also from, like, building his staff. And you look at what is on this staff, and Moorhead is just the latest addition that I think is going to make Oregon fans very, very excited. And we saw year one last year of what an Andy Avalos defense looked like, obviously coming over from Boise State, and how dynamic that defense was. And I think we're going to see something similar on offense under Joe Moorhead. I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited. The things that we've kind of heard these last couple of days from, and Moorhead's been pretty careful not to say too much, but the players the last couple of days have really said that this offense is going to be exciting, that they're going to take some shots, that they're going to be a little, it's going to be different, that everybody's going to have a role in it. So I think this is a humongous hire, and I think, again, Oregon fans are going to be enthused, first off, just to see a new blood at offensive coordinator and want to drag the old guy. Marcus Arroyo was here for a while, and I don't think, at least publicly, his perception locally was that high. But Joe Moorhead, I think, has a chance here with this offense, and it's a completely new-look offense without its starting quarterback missing all five offensive line starters, down a couple of receivers, and tight ends. But boy, is it a group that I think can be really exciting this year once we kind of start seeing everything come to play in November.
You know, along those lines, you mentioned the work he did at Penn State with some high-level weapons. Even at Mississippi State, they were so effective running it. I mean, we know the days of the Oregon blur are in the rear view, but what are you getting from Coach Moorhead about maybe the kind of offense he wants to run here? I'm getting he wants maybe a more traditional balanced attack as opposed to top-heavy in any one direction.
I think that's right. I think the description he gave, I think it was back in May, whether it's going to be kind of like a West Coast pass offense mixed in with some of that option stuff that he used a lot at Mississippi State and at Penn State. I think you're going to see the quarterback run a lot more than we saw. Obviously, that was a big weapon for Oregon against Utah, and then obviously in the Rose Bowl where Justin ran for three touchdowns. I think it's going to be a little bit different than that. I think you're going to see an even larger, I think back in April, or maybe it was March, the last time we actually spoke with him in person at a practice, that he suggested they were going to run the quarterback 10, 15, maybe 20 times a game if it was required. So, I mean, I don't know if you're going to see Tyler Shuck on a lot of design quarterback keepers, or if it's going to be a variety of again, you know, the zone option or the zone read. But, because, again, we have not been in practice, and, again, he's been a little bit coy with saying too much, but you go back and watch what he did at Mississippi State. I think you're going to see an attack that looks a little bit, well, I'd say quite a bit different from what we've seen in the last couple of years, where, again, the quarterback was not an option really to run the football, and things felt at times a little stagnant. I think this offense is going to be pretty exciting And there's a lot of weapons, a lot of young guys, but a lot of weapons I think you can be excited about on that side of the football.
Talking Duck football with Eric Scopel, 24/7 Sports. On the other side, the defense you mentioned, and Coach Avalos did a remarkable job his first season. And then, of course, the pandemic led to Javon Holland and Brady Breeze and Thomas Graham left. You got D'Amador Lenore back, who's huge. But despite the losses, accurate to say or safe to say, there's still just a lot of talent on the back end. And Avalos himself earlier this week said, you know, these guys now a second year in the system or more, that guys understand what is expected of them. And you get a feeling that the secondary is still going to be really good.
I don't think there's any question. I think prior to the departures that you mentioned, it was undoubtedly the best in the Pac-12, and probably make a strong argument it was the best or in the conversation for the best nationally. I don't think it's in that same conversation from a national perspective, but I still think by the end of the season, we might be saying it's the best secondary in the conference. You know, you bring back Adiyama Lenore. I think that was a huge addition. And I think losing both Lenore and Graham would have been tough. And I think they still could have made it work, but you needed some senior presence out there. Otherwise, you're relying on, you know, true sophomores and true freshmen out there at that position group, which is just, that's a lot to ask. So getting that, I think that was a big addition. And then in terms of, yeah, like the safety position, the nickel position, they've got guys who have played a lot. I mean, Verone McKinley was a starter at free safety last year, and Brady Breeze replaced him late in the season. I think part of that was based upon the opposition they were playing. The games he appeared in over Verone were against teams that really weren't going to, I guess, stretch the field vertically in the passing game, and they were really going to float up in the box and try to run it. So Oregon put in a bigger guy. I think Verone was going to challenge Brady to start this year too. So I think they're set there. And then the nickel spot's probably the spot you feel least confident about, just because Javon was basically on the field, I don't know the exact snap count, but probably 95% of the time, and was obviously really dynamic out there. But Jamal Hill is a guy that has been receiving a lot of high praise from everyone we've spoken with, and I know he's not the only candidate. He's a true sophomore who was Holland's primary backup last year. Big physical guy who's very athletic. I think there's a lot of upside there, and if it's not him, a couple of other players that are fairly highly regarded. And I think you bring up a good point in terms of the year 1 to 2 progression, and that's typically when you see some big improvements. And you think about what we saw last year from this Oregon defense, and I think you get pretty excited when you consider what that progression might look like. And I know Verone McKinley said, my days are getting mixed up here because we've done so many of these press engagements. But I think it was Monday. It would have been Monday that Verone was saying the expectation on defense is they're going to be better this year than they were a year ago.
Talking with Eric Scopel of 24/7 Sports, I want to delve into the linebackers because from Gang Green to Clay Matthews, Spitty P in 2010, the best Duck teams are always loaded there. So, you know, you think of some of the less familiar names from the 2019 Rose Bowl champs. I mean, Funa and Matuatia are the constants. Now you get Adrian Jackson back. So who are some of the other names that folks might not be all that familiar with you think will contribute to the linebacking core this year?
Well, off the top, they signed the number one, number two rated linebackers in the country at high school, and that's literally the best two linebackers in the country. You heard that right. I mean, they voted up. And these are five-star recruits, Justin Flo and Noah Sewell. You recognize the last name of the second one. That's Penning's younger brother. Indications are he's obviously a very different position, but he has the upside. Higher rated, by the way, as a recruit than Penne was out of high school.
Wow.
So Noah's, the upside there is tremendous. He's like 6'2", 265 as an inside linebacker and moves incredibly well. Both those guys, really talented players. They're going to challenge for sure to see the field early and often. I think you'll expect to see one of them maybe start at some point this season. Maybe both of them will sneak in. And I think Isaac's played Matuatia, based upon everything that we've heard from Mario Cristobal, from Andy Avalos, and even speaking with Isaac on Monday, really feels like he's locked into that starting spot. And actually, he's moved positions. Last year, he was playing the Mike position, where he was making the calls, the line of scrimmage. He's now shifted over and is replacing Troy Dye at the Will linebacker position. So a little bit of an adjustment there for Isaac. But that opens up another spot for, it could be a number of guys. I think the two freshmen I mentioned are notable. Senior Drew Mathis was a guy who played a fair amount last year. He's in the mix there. MJ Cunningham, who's a redshirt sophomore as well. The other wild card, to a certain extent, is Samson Liu, who I think Oregon fans who pay close attention will recognize. He played quite a bit the last couple of years. He's not with the team as of Monday, from what Mario Cristobal has said, making the decision if he wants to play or not this season. We speak with Mario on Wednesday again, and maybe we'll get some indication of what he's choosing to do. But I think regardless of what happens with Samson, there's definitely the bodies out there. And Justin Flo and Noah Sewell are big-time talents, and I think if it's not this year, it's certainly going to be in 2021 and in the future, where you're looking at these guys as two of the best backers to ever play at Oregon. I mean, I think there's that kind of talent and expectations with those guys. You never want to build them up too high too quickly, but these are the two highest-rated linebackers in program history, and I think the third and fourth highest-rated defensive players Oregon's ever signed either. Behind a couple of guys you might know, in Kayvon Thibodeau and Haloti Ngata.
Familiar.
Pretty good.
So with the opener, wow, 3 weeks from Saturday, I thought there might have been a chance that Jordan Scott would either bolt for the NFL or opt out. He did neither. He's back, and at times he's been a force. You wrote about him. He seems like he's on a mission. So, Eric, what were some of the things he did in the offseason that might make him more consistently dominant on the nose up there?
Well, first off, he did say that if the season would have started after January, he would have had a decision. But when he saw the schedule and that it was taking place before that, he was pretty easy for him to come back. So there's just kind of a backstory on the possibility of him opting out and what he decided to do. He's reworked his body. He's lost 11 pounds. You know, you think about when he came in 2017, I was just looking at this for my story, he weighed 333 pounds. He's now down to 311 over the course of 4 years, so that's a 22-pound weight loss. During his career, he was, I think, at 322 last season. So, again, 11 pounds is not insignificant, especially for a guy playing that position. He said that the impetus for that was the NFL scouts were all like, you got to lose some weight. You got to be able to show that you can get upfield and rush the passer and be more than just a run-stopping interior guy. So that was the mission there. And he's also switched his jersey number, went from 34 to number 3. I think off the top of my head, that's probably the only time Oregon's ever had an interior defensive lineman wear that number. Pretty unusual to see that number on the defensive line, any single digit, really. I know Eric Armstead did that a while ago. Kayvon Thibodeau wears 5 now, but kind of unusual there. But, yeah, I think he's somebody to be kind of keep an eye on. I mean, obviously, he's very familiar. He has by far the most career starts of anyone on the team. He's got 37 starts. He started 37 of Oregon's 38 games since he's been here. Just the durability to do that at that position is pretty darn impressive. But, yeah, I think certainly a guy to keep an eye on and see maybe how he impacts the game a little different this year when you're looking at him a little bit leaned out.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, because when I first saw him, my first thought was, you know, as the season moves along, that's going to kind of weigh on him. But anyway, the last thing I want to get to is you posted a story about Daywood Davis, who you like have to check the weekly depth chart or roster to figure where he is or what he's doing. But, man, you talk about a team guy. What about the many changes he's been willing to make since he signed with then-coach Tagger? And I guess catch us up. What's his role going to be this year, at least for now?
Well, I think we don't know what his role is going to be for sure. I mean, he was going to play wide receiver, and I can give the backstory in a second, but he is now working with corners as well as wide receivers. He's listed on the roster as wide receiver / cornerback. So I don't think there's total clarity of where he's going to end up. I'm guessing it's going to be, you know, if he can help on defense, maybe that's where you need him more. I mean, you know, I still think they've got a lot of bodies at corner that are capable, but you do lose a Thomas Graham. That was unexpected. There was a high-profile signee that didn't end up making it out either. So they're down a couple of bodies from maybe where they'd anticipated. So Daywood made a lot of sense to bring back over there. And I say bring back because, you know, he was brought in as a big-time wide receiver recruit out of Florida with elite speed. Really impressive during his, I think it was his redshirt freshman spring game there. I mean, he made some, I think he had a couple touchdowns. People were excited. Didn't translate to the field. And so after his redshirt freshman season, and I think the spring of 2018, he was set to switch over to defense, you know, and he was there for a little bit, and then Oregon needed him to come back and play wide receiver last season after they had a bunch of injuries in that fall camp. You think about, you know, Brennan Schooler went down, Juwan Johnson went down, Michael Pittman went down. They had a couple of other freshman receivers in Gerald Waters and Lance Wilhoit who weren't available, so they moved him from corner to receiver, and he was on the second team at corner at that point. Like, he was looking like he was going to play. And he shuffled back to receiver, and kind of all season was kind of back and forth. And the plan in the spring was he was back at receiver full time, was going to challenge to see the field there. And here he is again, back in the same spot he was last year, having to make a change because of some roster issues. So I think a ton of credit to Daywood for that. And again, you know, you hear some of the comments from his peers and his position coaches just about the type of young man he's developed into. And then I posted a story. Actually, I wrote about 3.5 years ago, but just about his upbringing, you know, in Florida, and how difficult that was, and all the trials and tribulations that went with just getting him to Oregon. This is an easy guy to root for, and makes it easier when you see the kind of sacrifices he's making from a, I guess, just from a playing time perspective. Like, shoot, this guy could have, in theory, last year been playing a ton at corner. He made the move to receiver and helped out there for a little bit, and this year, I don't know if he would have played an awful lot at receiver, but that was probably the position he felt more comfortable at. And now he's back on defense again. So a pretty wild story, and a guy I think it's easy to root for.
Now, great stuff as always, folks. He's Eric Scopel, crushing it for 24/7 Sports, keeping us wired into Duck Athletics online, duckterritory.com, on Twitter, at Eric_Scopel. Scopes, always appreciate your time. Great information, great insight. Be well, and I hope we can actually have this conversation face-to-face in the not-too-distant future.
Let's do it, Steve, and have me on anytime.
All right. Thanks a lot, Eric.